Fantastic services, so don't let us down for the third service, okay? Is everybody ready? I mean, you ready to worship? Well, yes, all right. That was great. That was the best ever. So today we're going to be talking about the subject provoked, and we've been discussing the different components that make up Christianity so that you can be equipped to understand exactly what God expects of you, and then as you apply these components to your life, you will realize and you will understand and you will experience the life that God carved out for you from eternity past. So today my job is to argue that you are supposed to be provoked by the community and the culture around you to share with them the knowledge of Jesus Christ. And the very simple reason that you have to share with them is because that without Christ, they will be lost. And so this morning, my job is to show you that Paul was provoked when he saw this group of people that were lost to share with them the only message that could save them. And so this morning, if you name the name of Christ, you possess the power, the one and only answer to all the world's problems. And so this morning, you have the opportunity to share and to give the message that transforms people's lives. So I wanted us to think this morning before we get started about being provoked. I don't know if you guys are like avid sports watchers. Any show of hands, any avid sports watchers in here, you know? So I am one of those people that whenever I see something, I get provoked. Whenever something good happens for my team or bad, I'm still provoked, right? So like sometimes I'll be sitting at a restaurant, especially during football season, and like everybody's talking, but you know, I'm kind of slowly zoning off to the TV because my team is on. People are blah, 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 blah. And so all of a sudden, like, my team will get an interception, boom, and return it for a touchdown. And I'm like, yeah, go get that! And I'm like, and then I like, catch myself. I'm like, oh, I'm at a restaurant full of people. And nobody else is. They're looking at me like, what happened? Like, people are scared, you know, they're jumping. And so I'm provoked. I can't stop myself from doing that. And so whenever I see, back in the day, Michael Jordan, whenever, remember he came down the lane against the Lakers and he went like this, what, out to the left hand, flipped it up. Does anybody remember that? Show of hands, you remember that? That was awesome. If that didn't inspire you, then you're not saved. And so this morning, I want you to know that whenever we're provoked, we must respond. We must respond. And so this morning, there's a part of you, if you are saved, child of God, and when you're a Christian, you're born again this morning, there's a part of you that when you see the condition of the culture with which you live, that you should be provoked to share with them that it doesn't have to be this way, that there is actually an answer, that there's a greater meaning and purpose to life. And so this morning I want to share with you a story in the Bible, and that this story is where Genesis Metro emanates from. So it is essentially the genesis of Genesis Metro. Isn't that clever? I thought it was. And so this is how our church began, was to look at this culture in Genesis 17, and they were an affluent, educated culture, and yet had no idea who God was. And I believe Frisco, Texas, and most of America, compared to all the rest of the world, is an affluent, educated society, and yet they have no idea who God is. So this morning, I hope that you'll be inspired by a man who was inspired 2,000 years ago to share with a culture just like ours. And so it says in Acts chapter 17, now while Paul was waiting for them, his missionary team, he had been separated from them because he had been kicked out of a couple of towns for preaching the gospel. And so now he was escorted to Athens to wait on his team to gather him. And so while he was waiting there, it says his spirit was provoked within him as he saw the city was full of idols. So their condition provoked a response from inside of him. And so he reasoned in the synagogue with the Jews and the devout persons, and in the marketplace every day with those who happened to be there. And then eventually, the conclusion of this paragraph, verse 19, says, they took him and they brought him to the Areopagus, saying, may we know what this new teaching is that you are presenting. So the first thing I want you to notice there is that Paul was provoked by the heart of God. Because when God saw this city in the condition that it was in, he providentially moved Paul. Paul didn't choose to go to Athens. Athens chose him. When we moved to Frisco, Texas, We didn't choose Frisco. Frisco chose us. We had never been to Frisco before we moved to Frisco. So we came down here after we'd already resigned and said that God was calling us to Frisco to be here for the first time. So people ask oftentimes, why Frisco? I don't know. When I get to heaven, I'll ask God. But I don't have a good reason other than this is where God called us. And so this morning, I want you to think about that you are where you are, not by accident, not by accident. And that God wants you to be useful where you are. So it says that Paul was moved in his spirit. Now we need to think about that for a moment. I want you to think about, what is it that moves you? What is it that inspires you? This morning, did you come in here as inspired as you've ever been in life? Are you as motivated as you've ever been in life? Or this morning, are you apathetic, sluggish, maybe downtrodden, maybe got some Eeyore complex in here, nobody loves me. I don't know what it is that's going on in your life, but here was Paul, and it says that he was provoked in his spirit. Now, you need to understand, man is comprised of three components: mind, body, or flesh, and the spirit. Mind, flesh, spirit. And the part that God saves, the part that is useful to God that you possess, is your spirit. At the moment that you accept Christ, it says that your spirit is made alive, that he regenerates you, that you are born again at the spirit level. And that he puts his Holy Spirit into your spirit at the moment that you believe. Now, you should just get excited about that alone. I should have been like, that was like amen time right there, okay? If God's spirit lives in you, God himself lives in you, that's not exciting to you? Come on, you got to do better than that, all right? So here is his spirit living inside of your spirit. And he says that is the God part, okay? And then you have your flesh. And then this is where it gets bad for you, okay? Your flesh is selfish. Your flesh is tainted and impossibly broken. Like it'll never be fixed until you die, okay? So your flesh is bent toward evil, toward selfishness, toward doing thoughts and having thoughts that are unthinkable. All of us in here have had those thoughts. And some of us have even done some of those things. And so our flesh is at war with our spirit. So the spirit is fighting against the flesh, and the battleground is the mind. The mind. So once you have the Spirit of God in you, he's pulling you towards selflessness and sacrifice. Your flesh is pulling you towards selfishness. And this morning, everything that you want instead of what others need or what God even needs of you. So this morning, that battle lines are set up, and here is Paul, and he's saying that his heart was in tune with God, and that God inspired him from the inside. The deepest part of him is where he drew his motivation for his actions. Now, why is that important for you? Because right now, if your motivation for life, if your provocation for life is not the deepest God part of you, then you're walking in here this morning and you are not living the abundant life. You are not living the ultimate, greatest, most awesome life that you could possibly live. You're living, you're existing, you're breathing air, you're eating food, okay? But you're not living at the highest level that you can live. And your actions, your motivations, your emotions reflect the level of life that you're living. You see, if we take this to a practical level, let's think about marriage. Like if you want to have a happy marriage in here, raise your hand. Raise your hand, all right? If you want to have a horrible marriage in here, raise your hand, all right? If you want to just marry the complete wrong person someday and just throw your life away in misery, raise your hand. All right, nobody wants to do that. Well, how can you have a successful marriage if you aren't connected to God at the deepest level? It's impossible, because he says, the type of love it takes for you to succeed in marriage is one that resembles Christ's love for the church. He said, husbands, love your wives as what? Christ loved the church. And wives, you're to reciprocate that same self-sacrificing type of love. Well, how, you, in your flesh, do you possess that type of love? Answer?
No.
No. In your flesh, you don't have it. You don't have the capacity to love the way that you're supposed to love in marriage on your own. You don't have it. So this morning, if you're not connected in the deepest part of your soul with Christ and not beating with His Spirit's leading, how then would you be able to practically live out a God-type marriage when you don't even have the God-type connection? Impossible. So on a practical level, we must be inspired from the inside out. We must be provoked from that which He has put in us in order to live out the type of relationships that God wants us to live out, ultimately expressing itself in the sharing of God's truth with others that are lost. So He was provoked in His Spirit. And then the next thing we see is that He was provoked to complicate His schedule. I want you to look at this graphic with me right quick and see if anybody can relate to this graphic. Raise your hands if you can relate. Does anybody live a busy life? Does every day feel like it is busy? I bet no one in here is like, you know what, I just have too much time. I just don't have anything to do. No? I mean, something has gone probably either really wrong or really right. Right? Because either you're really rich or you're really on the verge of going under if you have too much time on your hands. And so here this morning, I want you to think, this is most people's lives. So Paul was moving from city to city. And he had been kicked out of a couple cities for preaching the gospel. And then he comes to Athens. He's escorted, actually, like, hey, come this way. And so they moved him to Athens, and here he was. And you got to understand, when he was moving from city to city, oftentimes Paul was beaten. I mean, he was on his way from one city to another city. And they didn't have, like, planes that they got in, and they flew in first class, you know, to the next city, you know, in an air-conditioned thing in the sky. They didn't have those. And so they would have to get on ships, and sometimes his ship fell apart and was hit a rock, and he was shipwrecked, thought he was going to die, was at sea for like 3 days. He was beaten several times, almost killed, all stoned several times. And so here was Paul moving from city to city, and if ever there was a time, he's separated from his team, he's all alone, he's in Athens, he's in a foreign place, he's never been there before. You know what Paul probably would have said if he was us? He'd have probably said, you know what, I need to take this, I need to have a little me time. Is anybody, you know, like, you know what, I just need a little me time. And here's the thing. If you're not careful, I'm not saying that there's not time to relax. I'm not saying there's not downtime. What I am saying is this, that Christianity will complicate your schedule. Because Christianity will never be convenient. It will never be convenient. Have you lived Christian life long enough to realize this? I don't know if you like read the fine print when they signed you up, right? You know, you want to accept Jesus? Yes. Well, in the fine print, it said your life is going to be incredibly complicated if you want to live out the ministry of Jesus Christ. Because people's lives are not on a schedule. No, they're not. Messiness, sin, brokenness is not on a convenient schedule. So if you're going to be available to minister to people in their darkest, deepest, troubled hours and moments, Paul could have said, you know what, I've gone through a lot the last couple weeks, I'm going to take some time off. But as he was sitting there, and he saw the people, he saw their condition, it says that he was provoked. He had to move. There wasn't any time for me time. It was ministry time, not me time. And so as a result, he moved to begin to share. You know, a couple weeks ago, we did our extreme camp. And we had like 100 volunteers out here every night. And we had 300 or 400 kids running around like wild banshees. And so I bet no one in here probably were like, you know what, I just had a long day at work, or I've been putting up with my own kids all day. You know what I'd really love to do? I'd really love to go down to the church and take care of 400 kids that aren't mine. Woo! Sign me up for that. I mean, I want boogers, I want snot, I want, you know, disrespectful kids. One of the kids saw three of our guys standing in a row, and he goes, hey, look, three fat guys standing in a row. I mean, who says that, right? Who says that? And so you come up here, and you put up with that. People are kicking, screaming, fussing, fighting, and all kinds of manner of stuff is going on. And you say to yourself, man, you know what? If you're in the flesh, you say, this is not worth it. Why would I even do that? But then, you know, when it comes to the night that we share the gospel with the kids, and you're sitting in your small group, and you tell them how Jesus Christ died for the sins and rose again, and how He has the ability to save them. And you see a little 7-year-old kid raise his hand, say, yeah, I'd like to accept Christ. You see, all that inconvenience, if you're connected on a spirit level, becomes instantly worth all the sacrifice. Would you guys agree? Would you guys agree? That all the money that we put in the offering plate becomes instantly tangible when we send our kids off to Fuse Camp and we see their lives changed forever. When we send them off to kids camp and we see their lives changed forever. When they go to small groups, when you go to your life groups and your marriage is on the rocks and someone speaks a word of wisdom into your life that's able to turn that situation around. You see, all of the time, the energy, and the money that you put in the investment becomes tangible as you see your life and the lives around you transformed forever. I hope that you would see that this morning and that you'd be willing to have some flexibility on your schedule, to complicate your life with Christianity. Not only was he willing to complicate his life, he says that he was willing to communicate the truth. He was provoked to communicate with them the truth of the gospel of Jesus Christ. I want you to notice that it started off that he was in the marketplace, right? He was just wandering around, and like the guy would walk by, and he's like, hey, I'd like to tell you about Jesus. You got a couple minutes. You know, it's an amazing story. He's just sitting in a metropolis of Athens, just talking to strangers, and the next thing you know, one conversation leads to another conversation, and next they're walking him out to the Areopagus. Now, I know everybody in here is probably like, Areopagus, yeah, that's awesome. No, you're not, because you don't know what the Areopagus is, okay? The Areopagus would be like the modern-day equivalent of Madison Square Garden in New York. I mean, the place where Aristotle, Socrates, and Plato used to pontificate things like to be or not to be. That's is the question. This is that place. And so Paul has been in this town for like a week, and the next thing you know, word of mouth has spread to the point that they're like, bring that guy down to Madison Square Garden, give him the stage, hand him a microphone. We want to hear what this guy has to say. Now that's crazy. That's crazy. I want you to see something. If you're not willing to have the first conversation, you'll never get to have the final conversation. That one conversation in your life necessarily leads to another. And whenever you take what God has given you, what he's put on the inside of you, and you're willing to put it out there, you're able to bring what is inside out and share it with the world around you. When you see their condition and you are provoked, he will take your ministry and your message and he will expand it and multiply it. This morning, you don't know. You underestimate yourself. You underestimate your capacity to change the world. Because when you are inspired from the God part of you, anything is possible. Practically, I'll share with you a story. When we started Genesis Metro, I moved here from Arkansas. I'm originally from Oklahoma. And I went to seminary in East Texas. And so I was up in Arkansas, we decided to move here, and I was armed with my college degree, my undergrad in psychology, and my seminary education, and I found out what that was worth in the Dallas marketplace after MCI WorldCom had just went out of business and dispersed thousands of people into the workplace that were more qualified and had actual experience. And the next thing you know, I found myself with the greatest grand job of working as a waiter at California Pizza Kitchen at Stonebriar Mall. All my years of education had led up to this fine crowning achievement. All right, so here I was waiting tables for a year as we were starting Genesis Metro, starting small groups. And so as I was at my workplace, as Paul was in his marketplace, I was like at my modern day Athens. And so I was just using this opportunity to talk with people about God. Now it's a little weird, I'm gonna tell you, I'm just gonna shoot you straight, okay? When he's like, you know, you want croutons with that? You want ranch? How about Jesus? How do you feel about him? And so I would have all these conversations, I mean random conversations with people, and they would ask me like, oh, why'd you move to Texas? Oh, well, funny you should ask. Let me put you into the car here, Genesis Metro. And so I was doing my market research at California Pizza Kitchen, and one night this young group of people came in, about six young 25, 28-year-old, probably more like 25-year-old people, and you know, it was a six-top, and so six-top, you're thinking, you know what, good tip, probably. And so here we are, I go over there, and I start talking with them, and sure enough, you know, working into the conversation somewhere about it, Genesis Metro, church, starting, planter, pastor, all that kind of stuff, and this guy seemed really intrigued, and he's like, you know, hey, man, you know, he started asking me questions, and he goes, hey, you know what, let's get together out of this place, you know, maybe you could come by my father-in-law's house sometime. do you play tennis? And I go, well, actually, I played in college. And so I told him I played tennis, and so he's like, set up a time, and I was like, okay, cool. And so I got his number, and I, you know, when you don't have anyone, you follow up with everyone, okay? When you're starting from scratch, it could be like a homeless guy, and you're like, hey, man, let's be best friends, all right? So I mean, because like you're just trying to reach anybody because you have nothing, okay? So here we are at this embryonic stages. I think we had maybe one small group meeting at this time, and I meet this guy and I call him up and he's like, yeah, here's the address. And so I plug it in the old GPS and start heading over, and I get to this gate, right? And it's over here, like right behind the dealerships down on 121, this big community. And I got to get buzzed in the actual community, you know? So I'm like, and I never had done this before, right? And so I was like, yes, Tim Borden. Like, oh, yeah. And so here the gate opens up, and so I drive down this road, and then I get to this driveway, and it's like this winding driveway, big fountain over here to the side. And I roll up to the house, and there's this full tennis court right there. There's a full half-court basketball court, Olympic-sized pool, outdoor gazebo that'll seat 60 with a full kitchen, fireplace, and everything out, bathrooms outside, and then the lower grounds that has a zip line for the grandchildren, yes, and a small lake. And so here I am rolling up to this place, and I'm like, Lord have mercy, I don't know how I got myself into this. So now I'm going to go play tennis with this guy I've only talked to one time at California Pizza Kitchen. And so we play tennis, you know, I might have won. And so that's insignificant, though, but not. And so anyway, so I finished tennis, and we're sitting there talking, and out comes his father-in-law, the guy that owns this house. And he walks over to me, and I, you know, get up. He's like, hey, I'm Bill Arenders. Nice to meet you. And I was like, hello, I'm Tim Bourne. He goes, yes, Chris has told me about you and what you're doing. He goes, I want you to know something. He goes, I appreciate what you're doing. If you ever need my house for anything, it's yours. I'm like, I have known this guy for 5 seconds, and he just handed me the keys to the castle. I mean, this is blowing my mind. You tell me, how could I manipulate that circumstance? 8 months later, whenever we had gathered four small groups, we had them all invite their friends out to a barbecue. And who did I call? Bill O'Render. And table for 100? Yes. And we had a barbecue with a bounce house. This guy wasn't even there. He was like in Hawaii or something like that. And we had a bounce house, a cotton candy machine, and barbecue. And we had our first big event. Rick Goodwin. Is Rick Goodwin here? Rick Goodwin. I met Rick Goodwin, who now goes to Genesis Metro, at that event. Let's give Rick a hand. Rick, was that not awesome, that dude's house? Okay, so we had to park people on the lower grounds and golf cart them all the way to the house. Okay, that's how big this was. This is the biggest subdivision house in all of Frisco. And God moved in mysterious ways, because I had the first conversation. 8 months later, I was able to have the final conversation that launched Genesis Metro. And now you sit in these chairs today, all because first conversations were had that led to final conversations. What I'm trying to get you to see is you have no idea, if you're willing to just share what God has put in you with the people around you, you have no idea where it will lead. Could I have imagined in my wildest imaginations that 12 years from yesterday, long ago, we would be sitting in here and now having impacted thousands of lives and built a core in our community where people by the hundreds send their children to our VBS that don't even know who we are, because our reputation precedes us, that we care about people. On two different continents now, we're making an impact in people's lives with the gospel. I mean, but people, what I'm trying to get you to say is your life matters. And the message inside of you is so powerful. The inspiration that you could draw from the God part that He has placed deep inside your spirit has the ability to change the world. If you don't have the first conversations in your marriage about God, how are you ever going to get to the final conversations? If you never talk to your children and have the first conversations about the principles and the precepts of God, how are you ever going to have the final conversations as you launch them after high school out into college about where they should go? You see, the seeds that you plant today in the first conversations will ultimately come to harvest in the final conversations. So don't you think that we should be about connecting with God at the level that we are sowing seeds for eternity? Oh, this morning, that He might provoke you to look at life with a little bit different perspective. So then Paul begins to preach at Mars Hill. And I'm going to summarize his message by telling you this. He says, "Men of Athens, I perceive that in every way that you are very religious." He goes, "I was walking through the marketplace and through the different places of religion, and I saw all these idols. And I saw all these altars to these other gods." He says, "As a matter of fact, one of them caught my eye, and there was an inscription on this altar. It said, 'To the unknown God.'" Now, this is where Paul was provoked by the portrait of a lost person. Can you imagine someone living their life to a God they don't know? But I suppose that if Paul sat down here at Frisco Square any given day and watched the people come and go, eating at Best Thai or enjoying the fireworks or the Christmas or what do they call it when they put all the paint on people as they run? Color run. I saw some ladies come into Starbucks one morning and it looked like somebody just hit them with a rainbow in the face. And I was like, "What happened to you?" And they're like, "Oh no, we did this on purpose." Okay. And so anyway, if we watched people on an everyday basis that we live and move and breathe and all around on a daily basis, I wonder if Paul sat down there, if he would not say the same thing of our culture that he said of the Greek culture 2,000 years ago. If you were to survey the average person that lives in your neighborhood and you were to ask them, "What is the purpose of your life?" I guarantee you, God would not crack the top 3, probably not the top 10. Educated, affluent, and yet their life is lived to the unknown God. They have no greater purpose than gathering more stuff that is going to ultimately pass away. This morning, I hope that you might see their portrait and that you might be moved with compassion to share with them a truth, that there's a God who is able to be known. Paul goes on to describe this God. He said, "The God that I'm talking about, you wrote to the unknown God. Let me introduce you to him." He said, "There is a God, the God of the Bible, who created the heavens and the earth and everything that are in it. And then he spoke one man into existence that multiplied out all nations, and that he determined their boundaries that they should live within. And then ultimately he put inside of them the desire to seek after God and to be able to find him." He says, as a matter of fact, if you would just feel after him, that he will be found, because he's actually not out of reach. He's not far from any of you. So this was his message: God is bigger. This is your message to people that are agnostics, people that are atheists, people that have no idea who God is. God is bigger. You say, "Well, what do you mean by that?" I'm saying he's bigger. He's bigger. He's bigger than you. He's bigger than your circumstances. He's bigger than this world. He's bigger than this universe. He holds this whole thing in his hand and does it with ease and not without effort. And so this morning, I want you to know that God is bigger. That he said, you're trying to contain him. He says, you've built these temples and you're trying to put God, you're trying to press him into your form. You're trying to put parameters around him. You're trying to fashion idols, and you're trying to say, "I'm going to live my life for this, and this is, I'm going to make God into what I want him to be." And God is bigger than that. He's not who you want him to be. He is who he is, and you're supposed to adapt yourself to him. He will never adapt to you. So this morning, I hope that you might be provoked to find out what he's about and less about what you're about. And I promise you, in the end, your life will be better. So God is bigger. That's the message. And then he says that he put inside of man this desire to connect. He created them to connect with him. He says that men should seek after him. So inside of every person, there is this God component, this spirit thing that's inside of us. And it's like a magnet. It's yearning to connect. It's attracted. It's pulled toward God. And yet our flesh is fighting against that pull. And whoever wins that match will determine where you spend all of eternity. So suffice it to say, there is great worth in the balance of this struggle. So Paul said that inside of you is this desire to connect. And I started thinking about that. I said, you know what? Whenever my kids were small, they all kind of came to this age where they did the simple puzzles. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? Like, you know, the 6-piece puzzles? Everybody got to get. Some of you are over here still working on those, but that's okay. And so like, you know, when you're teaching your kids to do puzzles, you start having those questions about their level of intelligence, right? Because, like, you know, I'm like, you know, you know, babe, that, I'm talking to Carrie, that one's pretty easy, and he seems to be struggling with that. I don't know. We might have to put this one back. And so I'm like, you know, trying to show him, this is what an edge piece looks like, and he immediately picks up a non-edge. I'm like, come on, how many times do I have to show you this? And so this is the way all little children do puzzles, all of them, universally, okay? So they pick up a piece, and they see one end. They don't look at any other piece but the end that they're looking at. And then they see something that looks remotely like the hole that it should fit in. And then they take it and they put it in there. And when it doesn't fit, okay, this is where you know that there's a child involved. And so instead of picking up that piece and realize, oh, it doesn't fit, I'll go grab another one. You know what they do? What does every child do? What do? They press harder. I mean, they will break the piece pressing. Because in their minds, they're like, no, it will fit if I just press hard enough, I'll make it fit. And I thought, wasn't that the picture of the Greeks? Here they had all of these altars, and their lives were lived out to the unknown gods. They were sincerely searching after God, but they had the wrong piece. And they thought to themselves, if I just press hard enough, I'll build an altar for this God, I'll build an altar for this God, I'll build an altar for this God, I'll cover all my bases, I'll do good works, I'll do good deeds, I'll go to charity, I'll do everything, I'll just keep pressing all of these earthly endeavors into my life, and eventually it'll all add up and it'll work itself out, and they're just pressing. And here's Paul looking at their condition. He said, you know what? You can press as hard as you want on all these other things, but it will never fit. It will never complete your life. The only answer to the completion of the puzzle is Jesus Christ. This morning, I want to encourage you with this word, that the people around you are pressing as hard as they can. And they're thinking, if I get more money, if I get a better marriage, if I raise my kids right, they're thinking all of these things are going to bring them meaning in life. And sadly to say, they can press as hard as they want. And if they never find Christ, if they never turn from their flesh, they'll die without Christ and spend eternity apart from Him. This morning, you hold the key that unlocks the chain that binds them. You have the ability, what God has put in you, you have the ability to change the outcome of that situation. You say, Tim, well, I don't know how it's going to turn out. Neither did Paul. When he was talking to Joe Blow in the cafe in Athens, he never knew he'd be standing on the stage in Madison Square Garden sharing with all of these hundreds of thousands of people the truth about Jesus Christ. What I'm telling you, the result is not your responsibility, but the first conversation is. And this morning, he says that if any man would reach out by faith, that God is not without, or God is not out of reach. This morning, I don't know if you might be one of the people. This morning you walked in, you're not connected. You are not inspired. You are not provoked this morning. And you've taken Christ, and you may be saved. You may be a child of God, but you've discarded that piece. And now you're trying to grab other pieces in this world and trying to make your life work and trying to make you happy. I'm going to tell you the honest truth this morning. Until you put Jesus Christ as the centerpiece of your life, all the other stuff is not going to fit. It's not going to work. And you're going to live your life trudging through. You're going to live your marriage trudging through. You're going to parent trudging through. You're going to go to school trudging through. Just another miserable existence, just trying to make it through another week. That is not what God has called you to. God has called you to an incredible life. This morning, if you can find it inside of you to be provoked to get what's inside and get it out, I'm telling you, you can change the world 10 years from now. 10 years from now, if you would have that first conversation with God, if you would feel in the darkness and say, God, I'm reaching out, what you would feel instantaneously as you reached out by faith is the hand of God reaching back to you, saying, I can pull you out of this. I can save you from that. I can take your misery, and I can redeem it, and I can give you purpose for life. This morning, would you stand with us as we worship and we sing, God, with everything, I am provoked. I am provoked to give you my life. I am provoked by your heart for my city, as I look in my city and I see all of these lost people that I go to school with and that I work with, and I see their condition, and I see that they are aimless, that they are blind, that they are without purpose. As I see them in their lost state headed toward a hell that is unimaginable, that God, it provokes me. It provokes me because you have saved me. I desire to share the story with others, to have that first conversation, and God, I'll let you do the rest. Do you know that 10 years from now, you can look back upon this day as the day that you said to God, God, I give you everything. God, you are worthy of everything. You are the creator of heavens and earth. You allow me to breathe. You allow me to move and have my being. And for that, God, I am eternally grateful. This morning, if you would have that conversation with God 10 years from now, where could you be? All the investment this morning.